Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is Al Diaz, author of The Titus Concept, producer of the film Beyond Hope and Transformational Guide. And I also have my wonderful co-host, Cindy Holbrook, the Compassionate Divorce Coach of CoachingForDivorceWomen.com. Our topic today is staying in a toxic relationship out of fear of being alone. First, a couple of announcements. Continue to check back here on Blog Talk Radio on the Rewrite Your Story host page for upcoming shows and co-hosts. Also, go to RewriteStory.com for a very special gift that we're giving away.
My internal dialogue. How can I leave him? He's my best friend. I don't want to be alone. It would just be horrible to be sleeping in my bed at night by myself. It would be horrible not to have anybody to speak to whenever I get home in the evening. I'm just so afraid of being alone. And what if I leave him and I'm alone for the rest of my life?
My internal dialogue. Who am I going to have sex with? What do you mean I get to come home to an empty home? Who's going to make me dinner? Who do I talk to if I'm upset at work? What am I going to do? It's going to be lonely. No sex, no warm body next to me in bed, no dinner, nobody to spend the weekend with, even though we were not talking to each other. Who am I going to spend time with?
And who's going to take care of me if I get sick? Who can I count on to get the kids, to help me, you know, with the kids, to shuffle them back and forth to their appointments? Or if, you know, who can I count on to fix my cars or to take care of all the little things that need fixed around the house? It's just so scary being alone.
I don't want to die alone. I don't want to be on my deathbed and nobody's around me. What if I have to go to the hospital? Who's going to take me to the hospital? Who's going to take care of me if I get sick? Who's going to take care of me when I'm ill? Who's going to take care of me if they find out there's something wrong with me? I have to go to a doctor's appointment soon. What if they find something wrong with me? Who's going to be there for me?
And welcome to today's show. And I'm sure that if you are staying in a relationship out of fear of being alone, that you've had many of the same thoughts and perhaps some extra ones. You can always, if you want to share some of your thoughts or your questions or comments with us, you can go to our Facebook page, which I monitor during the show, facebook.com/groups/yourtoxicrelationshipdance. If you're on the Blog Talk Radio show page, you can chat with Al, and Al monitors that during the show. You can also call in with any questions, 713-955-0561. And one of the things that I want to address, which so many people say so often, something that I personally don't get, and that is, he's my best friend or she's my best friend. I remember during the breakup where my son with his significant other of quite a few years, he kept telling me, but Mom, she's my best friend. And I'm like, what is the definition of a best friend? If your mate's truly your best friend, are you going to be in the situation you're in? It's very interesting to me, and I've never got that. And I don't know if you have any ideas about the best friend thing, Al.
Well, you know, it's interesting, and I see your point, to be honest. I see your point. But what's kind of interesting, I also see what your son indicated, because if you're in a bad situation or a toxic situation, well, who else better than to do it with than your best friend? Because your best friend gets you. And I'm not saying it's okay, but if you're in a relationship with the person totally gets you and you totally get the other person, it's like you understand the ebb and flow of your relationship, then who better than to be in a toxic relationship? It doesn't mean that I agree with it, But you're not going to do it with some stranger, and you're not going to do it with somebody that you just met, or if you just start going out on a date, or go to your job with a relationship with your boss, your manager. You're not going to create a situation like that. So who better than to do it with somebody that understands you and knows you? I'm not saying it's right, but if it is your best friend, perhaps that's the only person you could be that way with.
Yeah, and I understand what you're saying. However, typically, in my experience and with different people that I've spoken to, you know, if you have a best friend, you're going to sit there and chat with them, and you're really concerned about what the other person's saying. And I think what happens is at the beginning of a relationship, even if it's toxic, you are in love with each other. So you're chatting, you're sharing stories, and they get you. But by the time the relationship's really toxic, I don't know that there's too much getting. I know even in my son's case, my son's very career-oriented, and his goal was always to move up in the world and someday own his own business. He is a land surveyor. And his ex used to always go, I don't know why you just don't want to stay a company man and have supervisors, and this way you can work regular hours and you never have to work overtime. So is somebody like this really your best friend that doesn't share your dreams with you? She was trying to keep him down whenever he wanted to move up. And, you know, he's like, she's my best friend. But I'm like, you know, kept asking him, you know, to compare the way she treated him to his best guy friend that he had since high school. And he was able to really start seeing the difference with what a best friend is going to be like. You know, I've had people who were in 20-year marriages and then get a divorce, and they're like, he was my best friend. Well, he probably was the first 5 or 10, maybe even 15 years of your marriage. But sometime, whenever the relationship starts going sour, that best friend relationship just isn't there anymore. So we're holding on to the past best friend relationship. Because a best friend wants to is concerned about you. They want to hear you. They want to laugh with you. They want to share things with you. They don't just want to sit there and argue with you or tell you that you're stupid or whatever you're doing is wrong. They don't want to keep you down, such as my son's ex, trying to keep him just being a regular employee rather than moving up the ladder. So there's things like that. So what do you think of that, Al?
Well, you know, and again, I don't necessarily agree that if you're in a toxic relationship, the person is your best friend. But I understand how a person can view it from that perspective. But, yeah, if you're in a toxic relationship, whether it's with your significant other or at a job or even a friend or your parents or family members or anything, I don't agree that a toxic relationship should exist. If anything, you should walk away. Here's the bottom line. If you go to sleep at night or you wake up in the morning and you're depressed or your first thought is, or you go to sleep and your thoughts are, oh, that really sucks what this other person said or did. And you fall asleep thinking that, or you wake up in the morning, your first thought is, okay, what is this person going to say to me today? Who wants to be in that kind of a relationship? Best friend or not, it's time to walk away.
And sometimes, you know, a lot of times there's a fear of being alone, and you had mentioned sex with, you know, who am I going to have sex with? You know, sometimes even in a toxic relationship, it can be the best sex, especially if you're toxic where you're fighting, and then there's just something about makeup sex. And it can get confusing, I think, to both men and women. It's like, hey, this sex is really great. I want to hold on to it. But not realizing that the whole dance that you have with your mate stems from the let's yell at each other, call each other names, let's ignore each other all day, let's do whatever. Let's not talk to you for, you know, for 2 days, and then I'm going to, you know, wake you up in a sexual manner. So it's very, you know, it can get confusing. So you get that. And that even, I think, goes with a the best friend versus not, but it's a little bit different because a lot of people, they don't want to be alone because, like you said, who am I going to have sex with? And men and women alike have that feeling. But other things a person can do, and whenever you have sex with somebody that you're in a healthy relationship with, it's really more satisfying than having makeup sex all the time.
Yeah, because you know what, and I agree with you, having that makeup sex, it becomes a vicious cycle. You're either in a deep love despair and in a high high, you know, while you're having the sex and soon after. I mean, and you're going up and down. It's like being on a roller coaster ride. So I know it's crazy because when you're in a deep valley, you're looking for that high, and you're wondering when that high is going to come. Then you experience a high, and then you can wonder, okay, when's the next high coming? You know, is it tomorrow? Is it a week? Is it a month? Is it 6 months? You know, you start thinking, okay, well, when's my next high? And you start looking, and actually you start focusing on that next high because you're thinking, okay, well, maybe I should get in an argument because subconsciously you think, if I get in an argument with this person, I'm gonna get my high back again, you know, whether it's that day or the following day. So, yeah, it becomes a vicious cycle. But, you know, one of the things that, and I know I've talked to other people about this, you know, I'm 59 years old, so this kind of topic comes up quite a bit. But, you know, we get to the point where we start questioning our life and wondering, you know, where we're going to end up and how we're going to end up and who we're going to end up with. And one of the fears that a lot of people deal with, especially people in their 60s and 70s, is I don't want to die alone.
Yes.
Dying
alone, you know, and I know and I totally understand that. But I had read something once by a motivational speaker. I don't remember who it was, but it really got me thinking. It's like, it's not so much, we all die alone simply because, even if we're surrounded by family and friends, because all of our family and friends that are watching us die, they're experiencing the same thing. But the person that's dying is experiencing what they're experiencing all by themselves. So in a way, you are sort of dying alone. And the big thing is you don't want to die alone, which means that you don't want to die where there's nobody else in this world that loves you. But is that really, you know, how valid is that thought? It's like, what if you've been married to somebody for a long time, you know, and then they die first? It's interesting. I've never heard of a 70-year-old or a 60-year-old that is a widow or a widower say, I'm afraid of dying alone. It's interesting that we think whenever we're leaving somebody, but if your significant other were to die, you don't have that same feeling, and I wonder why that is. Because I have spoken to widows and widowers, and they have never told me that they're afraid of dying alone, and I've asked them that specific question. So, you know, it's really something to ponder. Why, whenever we're leaving somebody, does this fear come about? And is it really a fear of dying alone, or is it a fear of not being loved? And if it's a fear of not being loved, who in your life loves you? I mean, do you have to have that significant other? I mean, you know, most of the time you have somebody. When I was in college in one of my psychology classes, I had to interview an older person, and I went to one of the care centers in my town, and there happened to be a woman there that was 108 years old, and she was so spry. I mean, amazing how clear her mind was. I had the best time with her sharing stories with me growing up, you know, in the early 1900s and going through the wars and stuff. But she, you know, she had a daughter that was like 80 years old, and this was like her daughter never had children, but this was her only person. But she said she still felt that her life was full of love because of how many friends she had, even there in the facility she was in. And you know, she taught me a lot of life's lessons just by our conversation with some of these fears we have is what, how can we control it? Just because you have a significant other doesn't mean you're not going to, that you're going to die first, so they're going to be there at your side when you die.
You know, Cindy, those are valid points that you bring up. And as I was listening to you, I was envisioning what you were saying and what you were indicating. But here's another aspect of it, and maybe it's not the dying alone aspect of it, but having somebody to talk to you. And let's say you pick up some kind of disease and you go on this journey of dealing with this disease, and it's 18 months later and you're on your deathbed. It would be nice to have somebody to talk to and share your feelings and your thoughts, you know, day to day. And that leads up to that 18th month when you're on your deathbed and it's time to come, you know, the time has come that you're going to leave. And in that 18 months, you went on this journey with somebody versus doing it all on your own and feeling lonely and alone and then you're on your deathbed and you're looking around and there's nobody there. You know, I understand what you said, but on the other hand, you know, it would be nice to be able to share your feelings and your thoughts as you go on this journey, especially if it's not sudden, you know, if it's all drawn out. You know, you find out you have some kind of illness and now it's drawn out. You know, you got 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 2 years to live and boom. The end comes and somebody around you.
Yeah. And you know, I 100% I say, I mean, I've experienced, believe me, lots of death in my immediate family, lots of deaths. And to all of our listeners, I want to let you know, I just want you, the one of the reasons why I'm pointing out some of the things that I'm pointing out is to get you to think. Sometimes we get so hung up with one thought that we're not thinking of 1,000 other scenarios that could happen. And, you know, fear, you know, I've always loved the acronym fear is false evidence appearing real. And whenever you start looking at trying to see other perceptions of what may or may not happen, a lot of times that helps to quell the fear. And with fear of being alone, I understand. I mean, I was terrified of being alone, so I totally understand that. And I myself was very ill for a long time, 3, 4, 5 years. I don't remember how, you know, depends upon how you want to state it. But by the time I had my hysterectomy, my body was so broken down. I was 30 years old. And my doctor gave me a 50-50 chance of surviving the surgery because of how ill I was. He did not know that my body could handle the anesthesia. So he thought that I could just die during anesthesia. And so I was very happy when I woke up because, hey, I was alive. But I can tell you, at 30 years old, I felt sicker and so much more alone and so much fearful, a lot more fearful than I do now at 57. But whenever I left Earl, that was a huge fear for me because he was, to an extent, my main caretaker. But whenever I look back, because our relationship was toxic, for, I guess, for so many years, and because he was such a workaholic with a type A personality, my children, who were 7 and 8 at the time, were the ones taking care of me, not my husband, which is really sad in of itself, but that's just the way it was. And I really had to get out of that fear of what's going to happen if I get sick like that again, especially because by that time both my parents had died. I also believe 100% with all my heart that whenever you need somebody in your life, they're going to be there. And, I've met, even in the hospital, my ex never visited me in the hospital. And I was always blessed with great roommates that would help me, or their husbands or whoever was in the room with them would help me. I mean, I was so blessed. And I think it's because I really carry and have always carried this strong belief that whenever you need somebody, they're going to be there at that particular point. One time I was traveling down a deserted road, and I was having some car problems. And so I was just trying to make, I knew that 10 miles down the road was this little like Indian cafe type thing. And I was trying to make it there. And just to make a phone call. And whenever I got there, there was a tow truck driver there. I mean, perfect person, perfect place, right? And I could tell you numerous stories like this. And I say this leading up to the, you know, being sick for a long time. My parents were married for 45 years when my mother died. And before my mother died, she used to always say she thought my dad had Alzheimer's. But after mom died, 6 months later, we found out my father had a brain tumor, which would explain a lot of the crazy stuff he did before my mom died. But after my mom died, he up and he moved to another state, literally, all by himself. He just up and moved. And he was 70-some-odd years old, but he had always wanted to live in New Mexico where a lot of his family had lived, and but most of them were dead by this time. And so he up and moved there. And then 3 months later, he found out he had a brain tumor. But in those 3 months that he was there, he met this woman named Charlotte, who she took care of him for the 18 months that it took him to die. And my sister moved there to help take care of him, but he preferred to be with Charlotte. And I'm like, so I believe that if you believe that there's going to be somebody there for you, and if you do have this long illness, I can say Charlotte probably took care of my dad better than my mother would have. But, and, you know, and sad for Charlotte, I mean, she had watched the same thing with her own husband, and that was something that they had in common, was that they were both recently widowed. And then all of a sudden, you know, she finds out my dad had this brain tumor. She could have been this horrible person that just said, well, screw this, I'm not going to go through this again. But she allowed my dad to move into her house, and she took care of him. So I believe wholeheartedly that there's going to be somebody there for you when you need them.
So I'm going to piggyback off of that and come full circle. So if you have the fear of being alone, you're going to fulfill it. You're going to become a prophet. If you have the fear of not having somebody next to you in bed, keeping the bed warm with you, you're going to fulfill that. If you're going to have the fear of having nobody to talk to and share your feelings and your thoughts and your emotions with somebody as you go on a journey, whatever's going on in your life, you're going to fulfill that. So whatever your thoughts and your emotions and feelings and spoken words that you're emanating from you or you're expressing, you're going to fulfill it. If you start thinking and believing, as Cindy said, and if you start feeling and having the emotions that you're being provided for and supported, and I'm not going to tell you it's going to be easy, especially when you look around and there's nobody there, or you're living in an empty home or whatever's going on. In order to shift that energy, you have to start believing and thinking and seeing and feeling that the right person will be there for you. Because if you keep fearing the loneliness and then being alone and being abandoned and having nobody to talk to, then life is going to reciprocate that and say, okay, this is what you keep thinking about, this is what you keep feeling, and life is going to reciprocate it back to you and say, okay, this is what you think about, this is where your focus is at. Versus if you believe that, you know, if you believe that everything's going to come your way, that the right person is going to come into your life, that you're going to be provided for, you're going to be taken care of, you're going to be supported, that person will appear to you. And again, I wish I could tell you what happened overnight, but eventually it will happen, and it will happen in the right timing when you're ready. And you get ready by starting expressing and being a person that fully expects to be taken care of.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I love everything you just said. Perfect, Al. And one suggestion I would have for everybody, you write down your fear. I'm afraid of being alone because I'm going to lose my best friend. So ask yourself, and I would say use a good old-fashioned pen and paper and make a list of other people that you can talk to. How can you replace that? So much of it, we're afraid of being alone, is we're afraid of the change. We're afraid of, you know, how, you know, of we think there's going to be this huge void. And the more we think there's going to be this huge void, the more depressed we can become, and which then we really create the self-fulfilling prophecies. However, on the opposite side of the coin, if you can start thinking, how can I replace this? How can I replace this warm body on my bed? I can get a full-size pillow. And then you start ask yourself, what are the good things about not sharing a bed? Hey, I don't have to worry about somebody ripping the covers off of me. I can leave the TV on all night if I want to. I can have the fan directly on me if I wanted to. Because there's always going to be things that couples disagree with in bed. And, you know, my husband, he has this joke. He's like, and I don't know exactly where he heard it, but he's like, who says my wife isn't strong? Just try to get the covers away from her whenever she's sleeping, because I'm a blanket hog, but what's the positive of being in the bed alone? You know, there's things I like to listen to music whenever I sleep. So that was a positive for me. Hey, I could listen to music while I sleep and nobody's going to tell me it's bugging them or to turn it off. So you have to see what's positive about it, because regardless how dark it seems, the more positives you can find about it, the more the fear is going to go away. The fear of being sick, you know, it's like, well, who would take care of you if you got sick? I mean, I finally had to come down to, because that was one of my hugest fears, was, you know, I just moved to to Oklahoma, where I have tons of family, and I know for a fact my family would take care of me. You know, I could also go to my daughter or my son, but they were still young at that time, so my option was, hey, let's go to Oklahoma where there's other adults that will take care of me. And so whenever you find things to squelch your fear, it really reduces the fear. And whenever you're asking, are they your best friend, you may have to ask yourself, how are they not your best friend? And you're afraid of being alone forever, or you're afraid of dying alone. You know, these are stories that you're telling yourself, and you can just as easily tell yourself a better story that's going to make you feel better and less afraid. But all of this, all of the fear, whenever you're staying in a toxic relationship, all of these fears, and even if you're out of the toxic relationship and you're newly single, you have a lot of these fears. But know that a lot of these fears are the fear of the unknown and what to do with that void that you feel is there because of the absence of this other person. So whenever you start thinking about the positives, what's good about it? Hey, I can leave my dishes in the sink all night long. I can throw my clothes on the floor before I go to bed. I can, or on the opposite side of the thing, I don't have to pick up after anybody. Whenever I eat, I can wash my dishes and keep my kitchen clean, and I don't have to worry about somebody else's dishes all the time. So there's find the positive in it. And believe me, there is positive in everything, and if you look for it, you're going to find it, and this is really going to help you shift your mind, your mindset.
So, and to follow up on that really quickly is, so a void or an emptiness is created by an energy of a vacuum. Something's being sucked out. I mean, if you leave a toxic relationship, but in a void or in a vacuum, Something has to go back into that container, your container of life. And it's up to you. Is life going to put whatever goes in there because of whatever you're thinking and feeling or whatever your emotions are? Or are you going to dictate to life and say, hey, this is what I think, this is what I feel, this is what I'm expressing, this is what I'm saying, this is what I'm thinking? Then you're dictating to life what's going to be filled in with that vacuum. This is a great topic, Cindy, and I greatly appreciate your wisdom. And for the audience, Cindy Holbrook, the Compassionate Divorce Coach of CoachingForDivorceWomen.com. Have you had enough of what you're going through? Contact me and let's rewrite your story for your existing pain to purpose that allows you to have a life you truly desire. My email address is al.diazforlove@gmail.com. And remember, join us every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific for this amazing show filled with wisdom. Thank you all for joining us. And remember that everything in our past, present, and future is our best and highest good. Have a wonderful day and a great evening wherever you're at. Have a good one, Cindy.
Thank you. You too. And big love to everybody. And tune in next week for Is Caretaking or Codependency Interfering with Your Love Life?